Welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. I am publisher Ryan Burns, and with me, as always, is one of the elite NDSU athletic minds in all of the country, Mr. Ross Uglum. Ross, how are you feeling after another successful weekend for the Bison?
I'm good. It was fun. This was a road game that I did not travel to, so I got to watch it with some friends and family, which was a nice change of pace. We had a little home tailgating, so lots of good Bison tailgating food in the comfort of a nice air-conditioned home.
Yeah, it sounds like the dream is what Ross is living on a daily basis here. But to start things off, Ross, why don't we dive right into that SIU, you know, victory for the Bison, 35-29. And the number one thing that stuck out to me most when watching that game was how dominant this offensive line and tight end and fullback group was for the Bison. They absolutely decimated this SIU front of the ground.
Yeah, part of that I think has to do with the fact that SIU really did not have a strong defense, hasn't had a strong defense all season, but at the same time, and I've written about it a little bit, the Bison are getting healthier on an offensive line that I expected to be very, very good coming into the season. You saw Jack Plankers rotate in a little bit, give, you know, a Zach Johnson a blow, give Landon Leckler and Jeremy Kelly, who actually, Jeremy Kelly was named Missouri Valley Conference Offensive Lineman of the Week, give those guys a couple of snaps off so that they could continue to fire off the ball, because Ryan, this Bison team right now is running at 45 to 50 times a game.
Oh, there's no doubt about that, and I think that it starts with the new quarterback, Mr. Easton-Stick. He even had 100 yards before halftime on the ground, and I know a lot of that comes on the read option. He went off the left side, got a nice block, put his left foot in the ground, put a little shimmy on, and went 60 yards, but not every day your starting quarterback is 100 yards on the ground before halftime.
I know, and what a cool play design that was. I really got a kick out of that. They ran read option with King Frazier going to the right, but they pulled running back Chase Morlock, who also kind of moonlights at fullback a little bit. They pulled him around so that even on a read option play, Stick had a lead blocker, and that lead blocker absolutely just erased the only guy that had a chance to make a play on Stick around the line of scrimmage. 10, 12 yards down the field, he makes the only guy who even has a sniff of a miss. But it's just really impressive. Coach Kleiman at his press conference said that Easton makes the Bison more difficult to defend from sideline to sideline. Even said that, former quarterback, or well, I guess current quarterback, but injured quarterback Carson Wentz, is getting a little jealous, wishing that he could be running some of the same stuff that Easton's getting to run when he comes back. But you got to be impressed by what Easton's putting on film right now, especially as a freshman. And right now they're just not giving him too incredibly much to do, and they're utilizing his athleticism in a very impressive way.
Yeah, speaking of a guy who got to show off his athleticism a little bit, let's talk about running back King Frazier. 16 carries, 177 yards. I mean, that comes out to just over 11 a carry. He had the touchdown. He had, you know, 250-plus yard runs. And the fun part about those runs, Ross, was that he was untouched for the first 20, 30 yards downfield, and he just got to turn on the Jets. But what do you think of King Frazier on Saturday?
Well, that's the thing, is King's kind of the masher of the running backs group. It's not that he's slow, but when you compare him to guys like Bruce Anderson and Lance Dunn, he just doesn't have the same top-end level speed. But it doesn't really matter what kind of top-end level speed you have when the blocking does not require that anybody touches you for the first 35 yards. There's a lot of backs that can succeed at that point. But it was, honestly, the 250-yard runs were big, but there were some runs in between the tackles that really showed you what King Frazier was all about as a football player and were really, really impressive. I mean, he was breaking tackles. There were a lot of should-have-been 1-yard gains, should-have-been 2-yard gains that were 7- and 8-yard gains that kept drives going. And you know, that's got to be demoralizing, and obviously, you know, eventually that defense flat out became demoralized because of how many huge runs that they were allowing and how often, like you said, those runs were, you know, untouched. You've got to be able to play better run defense than SIU did, and they just didn't. They got dominated all game long.
Yeah, anytime you run the ball down the throat of an opponent for 45 to 50 times or 48 like the Bison did on Saturday, and you average 8.3 yards per carry, that come the third and fourth quarter, that's just, as you said, it's got to be absolutely demoralizing knowing you're doing everything you can to stop it, and they're still getting 7, 8, 9 yards a clip. But, you know, I digress. So why don't we, you know, Easton only threw for 138 yards on the day, but it was the Creighton Prep connection is what kept this Bison offense moving through the air. Obviously, a large chunk of that came on the post route from Easton to RJ. They stroked the post a little bit for a 77-yard touchdown, but again, Creighton Prep guys coming up big, Ross.
Yeah. They seem to obviously have the connection that you would hope that they would have after playing in high school with each other, but they're still making plays on, you know, on this level, which makes that not a bothersome thing. It's not a question of favoritism. It's a question of who's getting open, and RJ Erzendowski is getting open. Obviously, yeah, the big play was on the bomb, but there were a couple of shorter routes too where you could tell that those two had an understanding of how to pick up 8 yards, how to pick up 13 yards, things like that. And that first touchdown was really something else. I don't know if you saw that, but the two-handed chest pass over the committing cornerback was pretty awesome.
Flip pass there to a wide open guy.
But yeah, obviously, you know, The stick to RJ Erzendowski connection is going to be something that we're going to see this year. And then obviously, you know, for the next 2 years, it'll be interesting to see what Easton does as a senior after RJ graduates. Because, you know, as you know, Easton redshirted last year and RJ didn't. So there's going to have to be a year where those two don't get to play football together.
Yeah, and knowing the talent that obviously NDSU has as a freshman right now, and what they have coming in this 2016 recruiting class, I can promise you that Easton is going to have a plethora of athletic targets to throw to. You know, enough about the offense. The guy that we really have to talk about on this defense is Nick DeLuca. The junior linebacker had 20 total tackles on Saturday. 20! That is not every day you see a college football player, let alone a football player, reach that kind of a tackle total. What did you think of Nick DeLuca's play?
Well, this might be a little bit before your time covering the Bison, but we had a linebacker by the name of Grant Olson that this is very reminiscent of. In one of the playoff runs, one of the read option teams ran their offense, and it ended in a 29-tackle game for Grant Olson. So this was shades of Grant Olson, and you got to feel great for DeLuca. He got a lot of accolades this week. He was the MVFC Defensive Player of the Year and actually got a few national awards for his performance against SIU. I made the joke that, you know, how could he not? A lot of what SIU ran for Iannotti was not a read. They would use him almost as a wildcat quarterback, and they would use that up back in the shotgun as a lead blocker. And he would just go straight up the middle and ram into Nick DeLuca for 1 or 2 yards, and then they'd run it again. So there was a lot of DeLuca shutting down Iannotti. I'd be interested to see the splits of who he actually tackled, because to me it seemed like it was the quarterback play after play after play. You got to be impressed by this kid, though. Like I said at the beginning of the season, you don't see a lot of NDSU linebackers that are 6'3", 250. That's NFL size.
Right.
And DeLuca is really, really an impressive player.
He is. And speaking of shutting down Iannotti, I think C.J. Smith may want to send him a thank you card in the mail, because that may have been the easiest interception C.J. is going to have in his career here at NDSU. Iannotti just completely overthrows his intended target into the waiting hands of C.J. Smith. But C.J. had a very good day statistically, 7 total tackles, 2 tackles for loss, a sack, an interception, and 3 passes broken up. What did you think of CJ's play on Saturday?
he really is having an All-American level year. I don't know if he'll be recognized as such, but such an impressive player, shutting down his side of the field. Obviously did it to Winicky. The Bison as a whole did it to Gary Owens of Indiana State. But, I mean, how often do you see a one sack, one interception, three pass breakup game? It basically, you know, never happens. The corner blitz that he executed was absolutely flawless. If you go back and look at the film, it was incredibly impressive. And it was funny, that interception came right after another terrible throw from Iannotti to Jordan Champion, who was playing nickel corner and jumped a route and just barely dropped it. And then, you know, North Dakota State was gifted that subsequent interception by C.J. Smith.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Absolutely zero question about it. I do have a question for you about Chris Board and his move to linebacker. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting because on Saturday, Trey Dempsey went out with a concussion, and I was wondering why Chris Board was – now, obviously, they play two different positions. Board, a bigger guy, plays strong safety. Dempsey, a converted cornerback, plays free safety. But that Board wasn't getting any snaps at linebacker, and I learned later on that weekend that Board had moved to linebacker. They moved him away from his normal safety position into a linebacker spot on the outside. Pretty classic Bison football to have someone who's 6'2", 215, play linebacker as opposed to safety. In fact, we talked a little bit in the preseason, and I said that Chris Board has a chance to be the biggest safety in NDSU history because guys that are his size generally play linebacker, and that's what they're going to end up doing with it. Asked Coach Kleiman a little bit about it on his press conference on Monday. Sounds like he's been the backup to outside linebacker Pierre G. Tucker in the spread, so he's actually been getting reps at linebacker in their nickel bear formation, which is what they run against 3 and 4 wide receiver sets a lot of the times. So he is getting, has been getting those snaps, but at this point he's actually now just going to be the second string Sam linebacker. According to Kleiman, Sam linebacker is the easiest position to learn of the three linebacker positions in this cover two scheme. And so if Tucker were to go down, it sounds like Chris Board would be your backup Sam linebacker. And then I asked if there was any chance that you'd see him at safety at all going forward, and it sounds like they'll still use him against heavy sets, 22 personnel where you've got a fullback and two tight ends with the tailback where a team's trying to grind out the end of the game, or just a team that loves to run the ball, almost, you know, like an NDSU, you'll see, you know, a Robbie Grimsley or a Trey Dempsey at free safety and Board at strong safety like he normally is. So it's not a complete position change, but he is definitely considered more of a linebacker at this time. And on passing downs, you're just not going to see him in the defensive backfield.
Well, you heard it here first with the Ross Uglum scoop. As always, no one knows more about NDSU football around the area. I can guarantee you that much. Speaking of, you know, just the NDSU area, it came out Monday, I believe early in the around lunchtime Monday, that NDSU will have some new uniforms and new, specifically new helmets, you know, for the Harvest Bowl this weekend. Ross, what do you know about the private donations that came in to help fund these?
Well, these are really, really cool. You know, obviously NDSU is a tradition-rich program, 12 national championships, green and gold colors, some uniforms that just haven't been messed with basically at all up until recently with the addition of the gold jerseys. In fact, Coach Kleiman actually made mention of that at his press conference saying, you know, when I got here, you guys would have never guessed that we'd have ever played in gold jerseys, but we're doing that. NDSU did this a really cool way. As you said, they went through 50, some of them were former players, but you know, 50 alumni, former players, program supporters, and got private donations for these helmets. They didn't have to, you know, really knock on doors or start a campaign. So they were able to keep it private and keep it a surprise and make it exciting to release the pictures online and show everybody this new helmet. It's a beautiful helmet. It's got a green matte finish, so it's not glossy. Other teams with matte finishes on their helmet would be like the Minnesota Vikings have a matte purple on their helmets. They're going to use the classic logo, the same logo that they use with the gold helmets, and then they've got yellow face masks instead of the traditional green. One of the nice touch to these, the beautiful touch to these helmets, and the tribute that's being paid to the harvest and to the agricultural bones of this area is the wheat spike. And so the stripe in the helmet is actually a wheat spike, and it's the exact same wheat spike from the North Dakota State University University seal, the same seal, the academic seal that's on any diploma from NDSU. That's where they got that, and it's just, it's well thought out, it's well done, and in this Oregon culture of everybody having an alternate something, it's nice to see NDSU, you know, not fall behind, but at the same time still really have a nice, classy way to go about doing it.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. I know that, I mean, this uniform combination, the helmet specifically, has been getting a lot of love from the national media on social media and just around. Again, that wheat spike, it looks so, you know, natural is probably what I'll use, but it's I cannot wait to see these helmets in action on Saturday. Speaking of Saturday, obviously Ross was at the press conference earlier this week with Coach Kleiman. Do you know any of the latest with the injuries, Ross?
Yep, Trey Dempsey's injury was confirmed as a concussion. They took his helmet away. He wasn't allowed to play for the rest of the game. Said he felt good on Sunday. Obviously, you know, there's testing and protocol that he has to go through. They had meetings yesterday and practice today, so it'll be interesting to see if Dempsey's a participant in that. You know, so far as they knew, there wasn't any previous concussion issues, and that always helps trying to get players back on a one-week turnaround if they don't have a history of concussion issues. But at the same time, you know, concussions are a brain injury, so every incident is not only very serious, but it's also, you know, different. So it'll be interesting to see if Dempsey's in there on Saturday. If it's not Dempsey, you're going to see a ton more of Robbie Grimsley, who really seems to be hitting his stride, and actually is a player that Kleiman specifically mentioned as saying they would like to get him from the 35-snap realm to more of the 60-snap realm, where he's in there almost every down because of his very impressive athleticism. Other than that, Bruce Anderson was limited carries-wise with that ribs injury. Expects him to be better off moving forward. They got good information, good news on Chase Morlock, who walked off in the second half with an ankle injury and kind of spiked his helmet, which sent, you know, nervous feelings throughout Bison Nation. When a player shows that much frustration on the sideline, you're usually assuming that that's a re-aggravation of an existing injury. And then the two defensive ends, Brad Ambrosius and Greg Menard, had injuries going into Saturday's game. Both played. We talked a little bit pre-show about the effectiveness with which, you know, specifically Menard played. Wasn't quite at his normal production level, but gave the Bison 60 snaps. And Coach Kleiman made a specific point to make mention of the heart that Menard showed, giving the team 60 snaps on one leg, but also mentioned that both he and Ambrosius came out of that game not the worst for where he expects them to be more effective moving forward, and expects both to play this weekend against Western Illinois. Ryan, the Bison had a big commitment from a 3-star recruit out of Green Bay, Wisconsin this weekend. Talk to me a little bit about what's going on with Cameron Hackle, and also give me a recruiting update.
Yeah, your neck of the woods there, Ross. But yeah, Cameron Hackle is now the highest-rated recruit in this 2016 class. He's someone that Alan Trio, the Midwest analyst here, is extremely, extremely high on. I talked to him about Cameron, and he couldn't believe that he's going to be going to a team like NDSU, where he thinks he should be playing potentially at the Big Ten, maybe at Purdue or in Indiana or something. Cameron is an absolute steal for NDSU. He's a defensive tackle. He's a highly disruptive kid. Makes a lot of negative plays in the opposing backfields. The reason why I think he may be sliding under the radar a little bit is he's only got like 2 or 3 games worth of film, as he sustained an injury that obviously didn't let him participate for most of his senior season, so there's not a lot of film out on him. But he's a guy that plays both end and tackle for Bayport there in Green Bay, Wisconsin. But I think he's someone who's going to grow into a defensive tackle, and that's what NDSU is recruiting him at, and that's what he'll be for the Buckeyes. And he's got a great motor. You know, he's very good in his ability to pursue the ball. He's good with his hands. And he's disciplined at staying home when he's on the edge, even though I don't think he's going to play there necessarily, maybe early on, as he told me that NDSU plans on using him early on in his career in pass-rushing situations, so he may be there. But I think he's a guy that can get more explosive as he, you know, hits that legendary NDSU weight room. But he's going to be a fantastic player at NDSU, no doubt about it. I know that the staff is very excited about this one. As far as a recruiting update, I don't anticipate any official visitors coming in this weekend for the game against Western Illinois. NDSU is still on the lookout for another linebacker in this class, so that's going to be something that I'll be keeping you guys updated on. And the other news to note is that Ko Keefe, the defensive end commit out of the state of Iowa, took an unofficial visit to Minnesota last weekend, and it sounds like the Gophers are very close to offering Ko as an H-back / tight end, and if that were to happen, I would anticipate Ko flipping from NDSU to Minnesota. But obviously, with all the things that have been going on with the Gophers lately, with Jerry Kill retiring and the staff not knowing if they're going to be there going forward, I think there's some indecision on their part about Ko. But so until they let Ko know what's going on, it's something that should be keeping Bison fans on pins and needles, as he's one of the best two or three guys, I think, in this class. I think it's Cameron Hackle, Sean Angle, the wide receiver from Chaska down here in the cities, and Ko. Ko's a very explosive kid. So I know that he's someone that the Bison would love to keep in their recruiting class for 2016. Ross, let's talk a little bit of basketball here quick before we start to preview Western Illinois. Obviously, the Bison have their lone exhibition game tonight against the University of Mary. You know, what do you think should be the goal for the Bison tonight?
Well, like a lunatic, I wrote 3,500 words in the the NDSU basketball preview, so I urge you Bison fans, if you only read one Bison basketball preview this offseason, make it the one at bisonreport.com. I'm going to tweet it out a little bit this afternoon, but this is a fun game to go and check out, especially if you didn't make it to a game last year at the Shields Arena. It is a hockey arena, but they've got a pretty cool setup for basketball, especially when you compare it to the old Bison Sports Arena. It's a nice place to watch a game. And the big thing here is it is an exhibition game, so redshirting rules don't apply. If a Dangu, if a Kai Cabellis, if a Dylan Miller is going to redshirt this season and not participate, in non-conference play, obviously conference play in the tournament, this might be your only chance to see part of Bison basketball's future tonight. Obviously, the University of Mary is a Division II opponent, an in-state opponent. The game not expected to be necessarily close. But at the same time, it'll just be cool to see Bison basketball back out there on the floor, and it might be your only chance this season to see a kid like Dangu play. So come out to the Shields Arena tonight, check out the game. You'll more than likely see me there, and certainly check out the NDSU basketball preview on bisonreport.com.
Let's be real here, Ross. Everybody's just coming to the game to try to pick your mind. honestly, come on now, all right? But anyways, let's start to preview the Western Illinois game this weekend. Western Illinois 4-4 coming into the Bison, the Fargo Dome this weekend. So I think that if you're going to start to look at everything, Ross, it starts obviously with your quarterback in Easton Stick.
Yeah, and that's almost every college offense, obviously, but it seems like the percentage of the, and I use this statistic in the preview for the Western Illinois game, the percentage of yardage that the quarterbacks at NDSU are responsible for are impressive. And obviously that happens with a lot of offenses, but not offenses that run the ball 50 times a game. Offenses that run the ball 50 times a game, you would think that the tailbacks would be more responsible for the yardage, but Stick is now the back-to-back leading rusher, and obviously he's going to be the leading passer. Everything runs through the freshman quarterback. Obviously, Bison fans, myself also, would like to see maybe him allowed to air it out a little bit. But as Coach Kleiman said, they gave Carson permission to kind of manipulate coverages, whereas with Easton, they're basically bringing him over to the sideline, showing him the pictures, going, this is what they're running. If this is what you see, this is what you do. They're giving him one, you know, two reads in his progressions, simplifying the offense and running the bejesus out of the ball. And so that's how this Bison team is winning. And I would, as much as I would love to see Easton Stick get a chance to throw the ball 25, 28 times, it seems unlikely.
Yeah, I would probably imagine you want to keep him as healthy as possible, consider all things considered. But what can you tell us about, you know, Western, and are they very similar to a team that the Bison just played?
Yeah, very similar to SIU. They run a lot of 30 front, which is, you know, three defensive linemen. It seems like when you run a power pull offense like NDSU likes to run with a down block from the center and a pulling guard, any team that plays with a nose tackle makes that more difficult because of the angles and gives this Bison team a little bit more trouble. At the same time, very similar to SIU in how they rank in the Valley this year. SIU had a very high-ranked scoring offense, actually first in the conference, Western's third. SIU had a very low-ranked scoring defense. They were ninth, Western's eighth. This Western Illinois team is going to come into the Fargo Dome and try to outscore North Dakota State to win. They're not really going to try and play a whole hell of a lot of defense.
No. And with, you know, Western Illinois sitting at 4-4, this is like, I mean, would you consider this almost a must-win game for them?
It absolutely is, and it's funny because Kleiman said that in the press conference. He said, guys, look, Southern Illinois was just playing us for their playoff lives. North Dakota State was playing Southern Illinois for their playoff lives, and you know, he went a little third person there, but I got his point. Every game now at the end of the Valley season is for that team's playoff lives because of how much parity is in this league, how many teams beat each other. There's no question in my mind and in the mind of most elite FCS minds that the Missouri Valley Football Conference is the best conference in the country. These coaches have talked about trying to get and deserving to get five teams into the playoff bracket each season, and they haven't been able to accomplish it yet, and it's because these teams just blast away at each other during the conference schedule. The Valley's goal is to get five teams into the playoffs, but you're looking at a team like Western Illinois. If they finish, you know, if they lose to NDSU and went out and they finish 6-5, the NCAA is not going to let them in. So this is a must-win game for Western Illinois. At the same time, it's a must-win game for North Dakota State.
Oh, it for sure is. One guy I want to ask you about here before we move on is, you know, when watching the game and then looking at the box score after, you know, where was Zach Vrah? And, I, you know, it's funny to even say that knowing how important he's been the last few years, but, I mean, he didn't even record a catch. I mean, you got to tell me that's going to have to change if NDSU is going to have success on Saturday.
Yeah, I actually specifically asked Coach Kleiman that on Monday. What they were going to do to try and get Zach more involved, or if they were trying to get Zach more involved. Obviously, questions were posed about, and our obvious questions about how much Easton looks for RJ because the two of them had so much success together at Creighton Prep. At the same time, Zach Vrah is the number one leading receiver in the history of North Dakota State football. What Coach Kleiman said to me is that, and I'd have to obviously go back and look at the tape, but I trust him, and he's forgotten more about football than I'll ever know. The coverages are rolling to Zach's side. Obviously, with his historical significance at North Dakota State and how much Carson targeted him, how involved Zach was early on this season, you know, they are going to roll coverages to Zach's side. With that, like I mentioned, Easton only has, you know, the one or two reads. If he sees that, he's supposed to go to the other side. Whether that's a Darius Shepherd or whether that's, you know, R.J. Legendowski, the ball's got to go to the side that the coverage isn't rolling to. So if that means that Zach Vrah's not a huge part of the offense, that's what that means. at the same time, I have no expectation of Zach Frog going catchless against Western Illinois. I would imagine that, you know, he'll get a few targets. At the same time, it's probably only going to be 18 or 19 passing attempts to go around. So this is not the Carson Wentz Bison offense. This is the freshman Easton Stick version of the Bison offense, and they're going to try and win by running the ball 45 times.
Yeah. You know, speaking of, you know, running the ball down the throat of someone, I mean, what can you tell us about that Western Illinois offense, starting with quarterback Mr. Trent Norvell?
Well, this is a huge sigh of relief for Bison fans. It's not that Trent Norvell is not a good player. He is. He's got a very decent 12-7 interception to touchdown ratio. He's completing over 55% of his passes. He's an improved player throughout the course of his career. At the same time, he has a negative rushing total for the season. If there's been one way to get after North Dakota State this season, it's running with the quarterback, and Trenton Norvell, all evidence would point to, is a freaking statue. So that's one thing that Bison fans don't have to worry about, especially, like we've mentioned on this show before, the way that some of their defensive priorities work, that's a safety thing. The safeties are quarterback responsible. With Trey Dempsey nicked up, it would be rough to go against a mobile QB. This week they're not going against a mobile QB. They're going against Trent Norvell. He's a good player. They've got decent receiving options around him, but he's going to beat you throwing the ball, and that's about it. Nico Watson, their tailback, is a completely different story. He's currently second in the league in rushing, but he's going up against that number one NDSU rush D, which is supplemented by the number one NDSU rushing offense. And those two things put together create a huge time of possession crunch for the opposition. So it's going to be difficult for Watson to get going and run all over this Bison defense, especially when they're not keying on the quarterback whatsoever.
Yeah, that, absolutely, without a doubt. My question for you is, I know you talked about how important this game is for the Bison. I mean, can you expand a little bit more on why you believe so?
Yeah, absolutely. I think right now, NDSU sits at 6-2. I'm very much not impressed with Youngstown State. Missouri State is actually currently the laughingstock of the Valley. They are getting blown out every weekend. I anticipate, especially with that final game being at the Fargo Dome, to be a blowout in favor of North Dakota State. So this game becomes the difference between an 8-3 and a 9-2 season. At 9-2, being the defending national champions four times, and also having, you know, quite a few wins. Like you were telling me, it seems like every week they have a top 10 game. Going through the Valley schedule with one loss, you know, dominating a top 12 team like South Dakota State, getting wins against teams that are highly ranked. And honestly, you know, North Dakota actually might kind of backwards their way into this playoff field as maybe the 20th seed out of the Big Sky Conference. That would give them at least six wins over playoff opponents. Those kind of statistics and that kind of reputation gives NDSU a real chance at a top three or four seed. Obviously, if Illinois State runs the table, NDSU's not going to jump them. But the Jacksonville States, the Coastal Carolinas, those teams whose conferences are weaker, who haven't done anything in the playoffs, and I know this sounds awful, but that don't have all the Benjamins that the NCAA loves so much when Fargo crams 19,000 and 200 odd people into the corners and every nook and cranny of the Fargo Dome, I think you might see NDSU with a top three or four seed and an outside chance if someone can take care of Illinois State at another conference title. Obviously, they'd split the title, but you obviously still get to raise the banner at the beginning of the next year to be Valley champs once again. And then, just like they did last season, they'll have to settle it with Illinois State in the playoffs. I'm kind of hoping that's in Frisco and not any earlier than that, because Illinois State is very, very good this year.
Yeah, that is without a doubt. And knowing how important this game is, you know, on both sides for both teams, I'm curious what you would predict for a game score. I'm thinking that the Bison are obviously able to overcome, you know, just after their last loss, you know, against South Dakota. I'm thinking it's a 31-21 victory for the Bison. King Frazier gets a couple of scores on the ground. Easton hooks up with Zach Roth through the air. I mean, what do you think is a realistic game prediction for Saturday?
I've got a little bit of a lower scoring affair and more of an ass kicking. I think really what Western does well on offense are the things that NDSU has absolutely no problem with. I think this is the first home game after one of the more embarrassing home losses in program history. And I think this is the homecoming for our hero, Easton Stick, who went out and saved the season by getting two Valley road wins against two competent teams after, a possible first-round pick left the lineup at quarterback. I think this crowd's going to be up. I think that the Bison offense is going to be able to run the ball down Western's throat. And honestly, I just don't think, as highly as they're ranked in scoring offense, what they do offensively is exactly what NDSU defends well. I've got 28-10 Bison.
Sounds good. I mean, it's a fun time to be a Bison fan right now. Obviously, the basketball team kicks off the season tonight against Mary, and this Bison football team is, you know, come together with under the legs and the arm of Easton Stick. So, any final thoughts here, Ross, before we end things?
I have none.
All right, sounds good. Well, again, if you want to read all the great work that Ross does for the Bison Report, I encourage you, especially with this 3,500 words about the Bison basketball team, I challenge you to find another writer in all of America that can write 3,500 words about the NDSU basketball team. But you can check that out. I'm sure Ross will tweet it out this afternoon on BisonReport.com. Ross does a phenomenal job there covering all of the football and basketball affairs. If you're interested in recruiting on who's going to be the next big star at NDSU, you can come read my work there as well. So for Ross, for I, thank you guys for listening. Go Bison.